Ban the Box. We've talked about it on this program before. We did from members of the city council. The idea that employers in Baltimore City could not ask someone whether or not they have been convicted of a crime and been in prison is the legislation that was introduced. The man who's been pushing that legislation is in studio, as he's been many times before, Councilman Nick Mosby, who represents District 7 on the Baltimore City Council. Good to have you back, Nick.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Elizabeth Torfi Donzella is with us. She's partnered with the management side employment firm Shaw Rosenthal, who has been speaking about this and opposing this legislation, as many in the business community have been. Joins us in the studio as well. Elizabeth, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
And you all can join us out there. 410-319-8888. Line up for that conversation. Your thoughts, bring them to the table. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, get onto our Facebook pages, or log in and just write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. As everybody does, Nick, we'll start with you. Just to talk a bit about why this legislation was, why you introduced this, what you see as the breadth of it, and I know you assumed when it came in that it was going to have the kind of opposition that it does have. A lot of questions about it, even though it had unanimous support among your other members of the city council, though some now question whether it should go to vote on Monday and should be delayed. So we will get to all that. But talk a bit about why you introduced the legislation, what you think it will really do.
Well, at the end of the day, we know one of the main key indicators that are continuing the systemic issues that plague our community is jobs and access to jobs and gainful opportunity. And we look at the disparities associated with the criminal justice system, specifically among young African-American males, not just in Baltimore, but throughout the country. This idea of implicit biasness plays a role. So, unfortunately, with the box, we say call it ban the box. With the box, once you check yes, in a lot of situations, those applications are vetted out. And the ones that have checked no are the only ones that are really given the opportunity. Then if you remove the box just off the application, and I'm going specifically to the bill, you remove that box off the application, but that's part of the interview process of have you ever had a past conviction? And just as a generic and ambiguous question like that, once again, that's when implicit biasness kicks in. So this idea of banning the box is just to provide folks the opportunity to compete and fight for gainful employment. And this is an opportunity that they have been barred from, this subgroup, this population that we know for years. And through statistics and studies, we know that, individuals with past convictions, the chance and likelihood of them getting gainful employment is that much harder than those without. And when we look at, just from a demographic perspective, African-Americans as opposed to their white counterparts, when they're trying to get employment and both groups have past backgrounds, it's increasingly harder for the African-American groups to do that. So this is just to create a balanced playing field where we basically look at it from an objective comparison perspective of, what's my certifications, what's my education, what are all those things that will qualify me for the job, and the right person gets the job at the conditional offer.
So when I know you represent a lot of groups, and some of those groups you represent have not spoken on these issues, but we'll talk about that in a minute or two. But please lay out for us, Elizabeth, the overall objection to the idea that an employer should or should not know whether or not a person has been convicted of a crime before they even get to the job interview.
Well, the Ban the Box legislation that is has been passed in many jurisdictions does just that. It bans the box, and the notion is that employers should not be able to simply screen out individuals based on history.
Right.
In other words, they should let them get to the interview stage, and that's a philosophical decision. This legislation, as Councilman Mosby has made clear, goes quite much farther, and that is does not permit the employer to know about any convictions until a conditional job offer has been made. That means an individual can have an employment disqualifying conviction, and Councilman Mosby would agree there are some that are employment disqualifying, get all the way to the end of the interview process, cast away all of the other candidates, and then at the conditional job offer learn that the individual could never have held the job because they had an employment disqualifying conviction. For example, someone with embezzlement applying to work at a bank. One would hope you would screen yourself out from that, but that is not necessarily the case. And so it seems to me it's a very huge waste of employer resources to have to get to that point to find out that there is a disqualifying conviction. It's simply not fair to any of the parties. Secondly, I don't think it's going to achieve what Councilman Mosby wants. It's going to make Baltimore a less attractive jurisdiction in which to do business because there's yet another impediment to efficiently running your business and making decisions about your employment. And secondly, as Councilman Mosby will concede, no employer is required to hire someone with a conviction. So if an employer is disinclined to hire folks with convictions, it's not prevented from doing so. It just does so after the offer has been made.
But the employer could still go, well, now that we know this, we're not going to hire you.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, and I'm going to come back to another question about what employers are ready to do. But so what about what Elizabeth is saying? So we get to this point, you still don't have to be hired. So what, I mean, I do want to come back to the disqualifying issues because that's huge when you look at the state code, the kind of things that are impediments in the state code already exist for people who could be banned from certain positions. So.
Regarding the disqualifying convictions, and me and Liz have talked before, I think she's well aware of an amendment that's going to be placed associated with federal, state, or local disqualifying factors to eliminate those jobs from the pool associated with being a box, just like we did with jobs that are directly dealing with children, minors, as well as vulnerable adults. So
what does that leave?
What does that leave?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of jobs. I mean, direct engagement with minors and vulnerable adults. I mean,
if the largest industry in Maryland, in Baltimore, is health, and a lot of those jobs go to taking care of children and the disabled, I mean, that leaves out a huge number of jobs that potentially would hire people who come out of prison.
Definitely, but there's still a lot of other jobs out there, you know, in the construction trades, and retail, and universities. There's still a lot of jobs that are available in the city of Baltimore than those particular jobs. But the point is that at the end of the day, I know that the business concern is that it goes past the application, and it's to eliminate the implicit biasness. If I have 10 applications and, you know, all of them have gotten through, I found out on the interview that 3 has, past convictions and the other 7 don't, I think implicit biasness kicks in where my focus and my time and attention is kind of zoomed in on those 7.
Now, I'm going to open the phone to you in a minute, but the implicit bias, I mean, I know I've seen the things you said, Elizabeth, that kind of talk to the employers who are trying to do their best, but the reality is that many employers, if they know you're had a conviction, are not going to hire you. They just will not hire you.
Well, I mean, I will tell you that I get lots of calls from clients looking at a person with a conviction and deciding whether it's employment disqualifying. So it's really not an on-off switch. When you say individuals have an implicit bias against people with convictions, I mean, the EEOC has a whole body of law around whether or not there is a disparate impact on individuals, and that is something that requires proof. It's not an assumption we make, but it has to be proven in an individual case. So, you know, I don't see I get many calls from clients wanting to determine whether or not a conviction is disqualifying.
Well, I'm curious why you think GBC has come out questioning it, but they're not saying they oppose it at this moment. The Greater Baltimore Committee that represents a lot of large businesses. Chamber of Commerce has been completely silent on this issue. And what do you think that is?
Well, the Chamber of Commerce is a statewide organization. It doesn't take position on individual bills within jurisdiction. Yeah. And that's not the Maryland Chamber of Commerce. Why the other groups are silent, I don't know. I will tell you that I'm not representing the Maryland Chamber on this. I'm speaking as a person who represents employers. And I really fear that this bill is not going to achieve what it seeks to achieve and is going to impose costs that are going to make it more difficult to locate in Baltimore.
So I'm going to wrestle with a larger issue in a moment, but let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on Ban the Box. There are many people here who listen to this program who have done time. We've called the show many times, people who are working in the community, with people who are coming out of incarceration, and we have small business people as well. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts and ideas on this Ban the Box legislation, what it says and doesn't say, what it means. If you're a betting person, you'll probably bet it will pass, but in what form and what will it mean if it does pass? 410-319-8888. Casey, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Mark? How's it going?
I know that voice. Casey, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Hey, you know, I really agree with this legislation. Being a person that's been a hiring manager from, you know, a large corporation standpoint and also as a small business owner, I've seen the things that are problematic from a hiring standpoint in a large corporation like Sodexo, and where I was a district manager for Sunrise Senior Living, where people were disqualified for what could have amounted to minor offenses just because they had prior convictions. Now, one of these people I did hire, and he did go on to do extraordinary things as an executive chef of an elite country club in New York, and he's doing a number of other things. I think what we need to do is we need to get back to where, you know, where we were looking at rehabilitation and bringing people back into our communities and being a little bit more sympathetic toward their needs. I think this is a great piece of legislation. Good job, Nick.
Let me ask you this question, Casey, very quickly, though.
Sure.
And very, very quickly. As a man who owns, what, now three restaurants? Do I have that right?
Yes. Two? Well, we have two more coming online this summer, yes.
Okay, so you've been expanding. So, I mean, a question, how many people you hire? What percentage?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
How many people that you hire come out of prisons? And what would you suggest? And how do you view that?
I say 90% of the people I hire are either prior or have had prior convictions or are college students. Now, I've noticed something. Once you pair these two groups together, you have a group of young individuals that have been incarcerated that are now standing next to people that are doing other things, which gives them that opportunity, and it gives them a fresh set of eyes to say, hey, I can do that also. Hey, why don't you let me serve tables? Hey, why don't you bring me in the kitchen with you?
Right.
Hey, why don't you let me work at the bar? And it gives them a fresh set of eyes to say, I can do what this guy is doing if given the proper opportunity. So, yes, we do hire. We hire from places like the Maryland Community Kitchen and things of that nature, which deals with that particular segment of people.
All right, Casey, thanks so much. I'll come by soon so you can see how good your martinis are over at Birdland. 410-319-8888. Let's go to David, a different point of view. David, you're on the air from West Baltimore.
Yes, Mark. How you doing today?
Good morning.
Morning. What I'm trying to say is this. I think people should know who is working for them. You know, regardless of what you did in the past, people do change. We're human. No one is perfect. So the fact that they want to this law could be a double-edged sword. Depends on how they pose it and how they put it. But I think it's a wise decision to know who you're working with, what they did and why they did it, and if they're going to do it again. It's better for everybody that way, you know? Everyone can make a difference. Make sense?
David, thank you so much for your thoughts. Comments?
The one thing I would say to David, if you're listening, David, this doesn't preclude the employer from knowing exactly who they're hiring as it relates to past convictions. What the purpose of this is just to allow during the interview and hiring process to ensure that folks are getting a fair shot. And like I said, the implicit biasness of a person with a past conviction is getting in. You know, at the end of the day, it's unfair to give folks a life sentence or a scarlet letter that they have to carry for the rest of their life for crimes that they might have committed or might have been convicted of, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And that's the purpose of this. That at the end of the day, if a person serves their time, they do everything that they need to do for them to have a fighting chance of going out and selling themselves at a job interview. That's a fair hiring playing field. And, you know, once again, them not giving the scarlet letter that unfortunately many employers apply to them because they've had a past conviction.
I'm curious, you can jump in on these comments you like right here, Elizabeth, but I'm also curious that, I mean, do you think that a conviction or a prison sentence should ever be a reason for not giving a person a job?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, for example, I represent property management firms. They have maintenance folks who have keys to individuals' houses and who therefore have access to people and property. An individual who's engaged in assault or an individual who's engaged in theft would not be a good hire for that, because the risk to third parties that the employer would be taking on isn't fair to the third parties. It's not fair to their safety. And frankly, if an employer does not screen that individual out and they do assault someone or they do steal, they will be liable for negligent hire. So, you know, there are convictions that are disqualifying. I know Councilman Mosby's trying to address this through the amendment that he's proposing, but there are many convictions that would be employment disqualifying that are not based on statutes. They're based upon, you know, just general liability issues. And an employer should not have to wait until the end of the recruiting process to then find out that the person really is not eligible for hiring.
And Mark, if I could just jump in there. I mean, the business world is taking on, and I know Baltimore, unfortunately, progressive legislation is not something that we're kind of used to. And I know that this is definitely pushing the football down the field a lot further than what we've done in the past. But if you take the idea of, like, drug examination, which most of these jobs, you know, you have to take a drug test before you actually get the job, right? They don't ask you to take that drug test, you know, while you're filling out the application. A conditional offer is given out, and then you take the drug test, you pass the drug test, any other background things that they look at, and you get the job. That's what we're saying associated with past criminal convictions. At the end of the day, judge me on my qualifications associated with this particular job in an objective comparison to the other folks that are applying for this job. And that's not simply happening today through many employers. And we're just saying, hey, you know, and then I know that, you know, from a business perspective, they lean so heavily on this question. A lot of times the question is in the top quarter of an application, right under the person's name and address and everything. It says, have you ever been convicted of a past a crime or offense? So we understand and know that it has been something that has been leaned on to too heavily, not just in Baltimore, but all throughout the country. And the idea is, once again, to remove it from the application and remove the implicit biasness out of the interview process.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back to this conversation. Loring and Clarence, the next two callers up, we're going to come to your calls at 410-319-8888. Stay with us as we debate Ban the Box with Councilman Nick Mosby and Elizabeth Torfey-Donzella. Walking the dog, Rufus Thomas, born on this day in 1963. We went out with Jan and Dean's piece. I'm not a surfer boy, but Jan Berry died on this day in 2004, so we played that. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones and come back to our two guests, Councilman Nick Mosby, Elizabeth Torfey-Donzella, excuse me, debating and discussing Ban the Box, and Loring, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Loring Cornish. Hey, Mark
Stein. Hey, Loring, how are you?
I'm doing well. I know you both. Nick, I think you're taking a huge and great step, a very, very brave of you. This is a wonderful idea. Look at all the people who have been misrepresented in courts doing trials. Look at all the people who have been arrested for marijuana, and now marijuana is legal in some states. I mean, look at Joe Brown, for example. Look at all the prejudice over the years that has happened in arrests and cases. We're not too far from the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. Where people were just being arrested just because. And to give people a fair shot out of the box, out of the gate, every horse starts at the gate at an equal line. Everyone starts equally. And if we can get this started equally, I think it's a great thing. And I understand the other lady's views and comments, but those views and comments are so strong. I mean, where's forgiveness? People do their time, and then they come out, and views such as yours doesn't give a lot of credence to our justice system. We do our time, we get out, we don't get a fresh start. And so I appreciate your fresh start. I appreciate your insight, Nick.
Let me before we go to Will, there's a question coming in here over the message box saying, I hear what Elizabeth is saying, but what can we do in a place like Baltimore where so many men and women have records? Many of those crimes may have been committed when they were young people. If this isn't a step in the right direction, then what would be a more appropriate way to give people options after they've been convicted of a crime or served time? Question to you.
Well, I mean, some jurisdictions provide incentives to hire individuals with criminal backgrounds, subsidies of their work. You've got individuals like Casey who are affirmatively stepping up and saying, I want to give individuals a job and a chance. And I will tell you, I have clients that take exactly that stance as well. So the voluntary affirmative steps are good, potentially incentives to employ individuals. And frankly, I mean, some jurisdictions actually have as part of their non-discrimination codes that an individual's criminal history has to be job-related, et cetera. So they actually change the discrimination code to address the issue of when is a is a conviction a legitimately disqualifying factor, rather than just having a procedural set of rules that that the employer has to go through.
But the problem is, though, that that we have a society where once a person is convicted, they're tainted for life in Connecticut. I mean,
life sentence.
There are jobs on these on this list, the state list, things like accountants, for one thing. I guess people who steal money shouldn't be an accountant, but you know, we have people working in banks that steal from us all the time, or mortgages, and they betray the public trust. Did they ever go to jail? No. But people lose their homes. Acupuncturists, architects, assisted living. So people come out of prison, they want to repay community and work with people who are disabled, can't get jobs working with people who are disabled. Audiologists, barbers and cosmetologists. The biggest, some of the biggest entrepreneurial projects in the black community in Baltimore are in hair. And you can disqualify somebody, hiring somebody as a cosmetologist or a barber because they've been convicted of a felony. Dental hygienists, a huge growing occupation. People towing cars, farm labor contractors, home inspectors. I mean, there are so many jobs here. Nursing home administrators, nursing home attendants. I mean, if these jobs aren't there, what jobs are we talking about? Most people who go to prison haven't had much education. Maybe they have a high school diploma. They still have difficulty with education. So these jobs that people could have, they can't get. I mean, A, disband the box, even come close to dealing with that, and saying that employees are should be indemnified, we talked about during the break. I mean, we are not getting to the heart of the issue, which is that there are jobs that disqualify people. People are disqualified from getting because they've done time. We're not addressing that issue.
You're exactly right. I mean, I've said from the beginning that from a ban in the box legislation, and this is not a Baltimore thing. This is in, you know, 46 other states and all around the country, not to the level of ban in the box, even with the most progressive language that we have currently today in Baltimore that we hope to get passed. We understand and know that this is one small variable in this huge complex equation of recidivism and providing folks real shot at gainful employment. But it's definitely a step in the right direction. I mean, you know, if we eliminate 60 jobs or 65% or 55% of the jobs out there, there's still another pool that these folks have been blocked out of and barred from for year over year. And, you know, just looking at the statistics on recidivism, understanding and knowing that 60% of the folks returning home from our Maryland State Penitentiary System end up in Baltimore City. We understand and know 40% of those individuals within 3 years will be convicted of a crime. And through studies, most of those crimes are related to theft and all these other types of crimes that are related to trying to feed their families and feed themselves as it relates to, you know, just living. We understand and know that, you know, this is a critical issue. And I'm just happy that folks like GBC, folks like the business community, and folks that are sitting around a table trying to actually talk about recidivism are. And, you know, and like the caller said, I'm really, really curious to see, you know, what alternatives that do they have in place to ensure that we address this issue in Baltimore. We talk about growing our city. We talk about growing families. We talk about bringing back our communities. We cannot do that if we're not building back the people in them.
So I'm going to get to Will and So, but Elizabeth, I might have a chance to respond to everything we just said.
Well, the problem is legislation that makes it more difficult for employers to recruit and hire, that makes it more expensive, is ultimately not good for the city because businesses can make decisions where they choose to locate. And I don't think it's in the interest of Baltimore City to create potential liabilities associated with mistakes in recruiting. And by the way, there are substantial damages associated with that in this bill. You will ultimately not be a net job gainer. You'll be a net job loser. And look at all the industries that have left Baltimore City for a variety of reasons.
Without paying the box.
Right. Absolutely. But we don't need to further deter businesses from locating in the city.
And I don't see that as the case. Again, Mark, you know, at the end of the day, people provide conditional offers with the idea that you have to pass a drug test, as well as folks, because of this implicit biasness and this unfair hiring practices that have been going on, again, not just in Baltimore, but all throughout the country, a lot of people lie on the initial application anyway, just to give them a fair shot to interview for that particular job.
410-319-8888. Will in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. That's exactly the point I wanted to follow up on. Thank you, Councilman Mosby, for this great progressive legislation. The point that the other speaker is talking about is that if somebody gets hired, there's a liability, and why put them through the interview and at the end of the day find out they're not qualified? If you put on the job description that the person will be disqualified if after the background check they're found to have been convicted of a particular crime, nobody's going to apply for a job they know they aren't qualified for. I mean, people do, but they're not going to go through that process just to be told at the end they're not qualified. I don't see the argument there. This is a great piece of legislation. We know there's an issue of high unemployment in Baltimore City among youth, particularly African-American youth. We know there's a stigma about living in the city. We know that a lot of employers, particularly those based in the county, have no experience with people in the city, and this would be one way to get around those implicit biases, explicit biases in our system. Thank you.
Elizabeth.
Well, again, if an employer has a bias against hiring individuals with criminal backgrounds, it can affect them at the end of the process. So, I understand that the intent is good. I understand there is a huge issue with employment for individuals who have criminal histories. But I just don't think this is the right way to go about it.
And so I have a question to come back at. The question is going to be, what is the right way to go about it? I want you to define that for us at 410-319-8888. But let's go to So in Forest Park. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling to say that this is a great conversation. And I totally agree wholeheartedly that sometimes people just need a second chance. And I also have had issues with the whole thing with credit checks and using that against people. And as a young Black woman, I graduated from college in 2011. I haven't been able to find a full-time job since I graduated. And I have a strong, conviction that my race and my credit and my class had to do with me trying to find those jobs that mm-hmm. are on my level. So I totally agree with this conversation. I think it's a great first step to ensuring that people are given a fair shot. That's all I had to say.
Thank you so much. But that's another interesting question we should come back to and look at it in depth another day, which is the whole credit question and employment that I think is an important issue to deal with, especially given the nature of how credit is pushed in a society.
Maryland did pass legislation last session, however, that limits, or might have been the session before, limits jobs for which credit can be considered.
So, and I think that's the point we should explore in some greater depth. I think it's a really important issue. But go back to what I was saying. So what is a better plan? What would be a better way to address this, if not Nick Mosby's legislation?
Right. So I'm a simple country lawyer, right?
I'm
an employment lawyer, and I deal with employers. I don't deal with social structures.
Somehow you don't strike me as a simple country lawyer.
No,
that's okay.
But that said, I'm not sure what the role of government in legislation is here. I mean, it seems to me that consciousness raising, public outreach, programs to try to promote the hiring of individuals with criminal histories, job fairs, those are good ways to go about it. And as I said, I mean, there are jurisdictions where it is explicitly part of their anti-discrimination code to structure how this information can be considered in employment and to try to ensure that it's job related and consistent with the position. So those are some thoughts.
So you don't see any reason for government to step in and
perhaps ban the box. If you really have the box, and I'm talking about the traditional ban the box from the application, if you really think individuals should get to the interview so that they can show their stuff, so to speak, show that they're earnest and have the skills and are willing, that may be an appropriate line. But as I said, just when you get to the whole process, I mean, you would hope people would self-screen, but they don't necessarily do that.
I mean, and that's the point. At the end of the day, we've created the byproduct of this implicit biasness and this discriminatory acts of corporations on these individuals is they lie today, right, with the hopes that they get in, they get the interview, they do well in the interview, they get the job, and then in many cases, in a month or 2 months, they're fired because of their character issue because they originally lied. I just think that this whole ban of box notion of saying it goes to conditional at the conditional offer is very similar to drug testing. I mean, we do not drug test folks that fill out applications and go through interview processes. We drug test them after we know that they're conditionally hired based off of their qualifications. And I'm just simply asking for, you know, corporations and businesses to preclude the idea of implicit biasness by saying because you've committed a past crime in the past, I'm going to look at you a little differently than an employer, potential employer who has not. And I will judge you based off the objective comparison of the skill set for this particular job.
So a quick politics question. This might not go to vote Monday.
Well, this Monday we don't have council. The following week.
So this probably will go.
So if this is just from a legislative perspective, if a formal amendment is placed on and accepted, it will not go to vote at that time. If I do not place an amendment on it, it will go to vote on the 7th.
Well, I want to thank you both for being here. It's been a really interesting conversation. You both were very, very good and very clear. Councilman Nick Mosby and Elizabeth Donzella good to have
thank you
with
you,
us.
Thank you, Mark.
Great to have you, buddy.
Thanks,
guys. And we'll come back to see what this is next week. We have to come back to it. We'll come back to it next week. Other issues have come up in chats and emails that I would like to respond to. I think this is very critical about where we're going to take all this. And maybe it's good time to have a conversation, a large conversation, between those who work with people coming in out of prison and those in the business community really have this dialogue on the air. Might be interesting producers to think about that kind of conversation coming back. Very quick, do we have to go to break here?
I'm sorry, Mark. Yeah, but again, that's the point of this. I'm just glad that the business folks, GBC, everyone's talking about this big purple elephant in the back of the room that we've known has been an issue in Baltimore for decades.
Good to have you both with us. And we're going to break with Teddy Pendergrass's Love TKC, the late, great Teddy Pendergrass, born on this day in 1950. Let's hear him. Thank you.